This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Wednesday, April 10th. I'm Alex Osola for The Wall Street Journal. Coming up on today's show, many people walking around cities have a sense for when a situation starts to feel unsafe. Technology on your smartphone could help. We'll hear about the apps and tools to turn to from WSJ personal tech news editor Shara Tibkin. And then, Google's chip-making efforts were key to its successes in search and artificial intelligence. Now, the company is making a new kind of chip to support its cloud computing efforts. WSJ reporter Miles Krupa tells us why Google is developing more of its own hardware and what it could mean for its future business. But first, violent crime is down. In 2022, numbers fell to their relatively low pre-pandemic levels, according to a report from the FBI. But people still feel wary. 40% of Americans say they're afraid to walk alone at night near home, per a November 2023 poll from Gallup. WSJ personal tech news editor Shara Tibkin joins me now to talk about the tools that could help you feel safer. Shara, what are some of the specific apps or tools on your phone that could be useful? Let's start with Apple's check-in feature. What is that and what can it do?
This is a new feature that came out with iOS 17 in September. What this does, it automates the process of sending that text to your friends saying, "Hey, I'm home safe." So there's kind of two ways to set it up. You can base it off of a destination. So when you reach that destination, it'll let one person know that you've made it, or you can set it for a certain amount of time. So it'll prompt you to check in at that time. If you don't, it waits about like 15 minutes and then it notifies your friend and is like, they haven't checked in. You can see their location. Do you want to call them?
Yeah. Speaking of location, how about location tracking?
You can share your location from your iPhone or from Google Maps, Snap, Facebook Messenger. There's lots of different ways you can do it. But for iPhone owners, one of the easiest ways is through Apple's Find My Network. So what it does is it tracks your phone. And you can set it up indefinitely, so it just always stays connected. Someone can check your location anytime. You can set it for like an hour. So that's really useful if you're trying to meet up with somebody and you're going to be driving and you're not sure exactly where your ETA will be and they can see where you are.
And how about stuff built into specific apps like Uber and Lyft?
There are some safety features built into the ride-sharing apps. Lyft has long had it so you can automatically send ride alerts. Say you take a ride at night, it can automatically text your emergency contact saying, "Shara's in a ride." You can see her route here. You can see the driver details. Uber this week is coming out with something similar, and they're going to let you set it for not just rides, but also you could record audio of the ride. So that isn't something that you can listen to. The driver can't listen to it. But if you have an issue and you have to go to support, the support team could listen to it.
What are some of the limitations of these settings and of these apps?
All of these require you to have your phone. If someone takes your phone, people can't see where you are. You won't be able to check in. You can't send ride alerts. If you lose connectivity or you have some other issues, they just don't work the way they should.
How about some other internet-connected tools?
Yeah, there are a lot of new tools like tasers, safety alarms, pepper spray, that when you use them, it will notify your emergency contact. Again, you still need your phone with these. They don't have like GPS built in. They don't have cellular connections built in. They are generally connecting to your phone through Bluetooth. So if you get out of Bluetooth range, they'll disconnect. I'm sure they're going to keep improving. But right now, if you're using one of these and you kind of see the sort of same connection issues, you shouldn't rely on it.
That was personal tech news editor Shara Tibkin. Coming up, how is Google trying to combat rising costs of powering the AI boom? We'll find out after the break.
The The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Turning to a story we mentioned in last night's Tech Minute, from YouTube to search, Google operates some powerful tools, which means it needs powerful chips to match. Now, as the AI race heats up, Google is expanding its in-house chip-making efforts to reduce its reliance on buying those chips from other companies. WSJ reporter Miles Krupa joins me now with more. Miles, Google is expanding its in-house chip-making, and it's making a new kind of chip. What is special about it?
Google, as one might imagine, has vast computing needs. It takes a lot to maintain a search engine for billions of people, a service like YouTube, all those hours of video for people around the world. What Google is doing now is starting for the first time to build its own general purpose CPU, is what they call it. So these are chips similar to the kind provided by Intel, that are good for a really broad range of computational tasks, software applications. And so what's interesting is that Google has actually been making its own chips in-house for a while, but it's been really focused on AI applications, the sort of generative AI tasks like serving chatbot responses like ChatGPT or Google's Gemini. And this new effort is much broader, and while also potentially helping with the AI push, seems to be really more broadly about bringing down costs for the company and for also customers in the cloud, which will be able to rent access to the chips as well.
Your story doesn't just refer to CPUs, it also refers to TPUs. What is that, and what is the difference?
TPUs are the chips that Google began developing at this point more than a decade ago. They were really the first of the big tech companies to start making chips specialized for AI work. Of course, NVIDIA has been a big winner in recent years with the boom in ChatGPT and video and image generation AI. All of that stuff runs on NVIDIA's GPUs, which were originally made for video games. And so what Google actually did, you know, a while back was say, we just want to make something that's really good for AI work, generative AI, things like natural language processing, translation. So, you know, TPUs are Google's efforts to tailor a chip to all the AI work it does across the company, and then also start to sell access to those chips to customers as well. So offering an alternative to NVIDIA's GPU.
And it seems like an important part of this plan is getting outside companies to buy into having access to this product. What would that look like?
Yeah, so Google has a big and fast-growing cloud business that's still third behind Amazon and Microsoft. But basically, these CPUs called Axion would be rentable like any other sort of chip capacity through Google Cloud for companies and developers that want to host their stuff on Google Cloud. Google's sort of stopping short of selling the chips directly to people. You're not going to be able to just go to Google and buy one of these chips and put it in your home. They want to sell it to you as a cloud service. And so that's one way in which, you know, Intel and NVIDIA and the chip makers, how their business is a little bit different. They are still willing to go and sell you a GPU to put under your computer to do all of your crazy AI experiments, whereas Google is not quite willing to go there yet.
What does this tell us about the future of Google's business? How dramatic a shift could this be for the company?
Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Google himself, talks at length about how the computational needs that Google and others are experiencing are growing at a greater rate than, you know, he's ever seen before. It requires a lot of chips. And so this is another way that you're seeing Google trying to control more of its own destiny as it marches into that future. It's helpful to not just be relying on outside vendors like Intel and NVIDIA for all your chip needs. It's good when you're trying to plan for the future to also have those capabilities in-house and to be able to design the software to match the hardware and to predict how those two things will influence each other years into the future. So that's what Google is trying to do here.
That was Journal reporter Miles Krupa. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang with supervising producer Catherine Millsop. I'm Alex Osola for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back this afternoon with TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.